C1B 1 and 2.
Number 14A.
We have seen that in Solon's mind, Miceti presents that the mind of man has its identity in soul, in God, and that therefore his intelligence is not in the body, but outside the body, in the infinite soul of God. Now we come to soul as spirit. The caption here is, as soul is spirit, soul must be unchangeable, sinless, immortal. Can you see the reasoning? Because only that which is limitless, like spirit who cannot be divided up in parts, can therefore only reflect everything of reality. And therefore it is unchangeable, sinless, immortal. The side note is soul imperishable. One really gets a sense that soul is substance and cannot perish. That soul changes not, she says here, and says, if that would be possible, if soul could sin, then spirit would become flesh, soul would die, and the annihilation of spirit would be inevitable. So we can see our whole consciousness therefore must be filled with that concept that soul is spirit. Or else, if we don't fill our consciousness with that concept that soul is spirit, then we have a limited soul, then that soul is subject to decay, is subject to be split up in parts, can become material. We have a material sense of soul then, and that kind of soul would have to die. So she goes further and says, in soul as soul, that spiritual man is sinless, that soul, and is never lost. Soul never loses, has never lost spiritually, but the sense of sin must be lost. She comes now to the point of the question, losing and not losing. Can man lose his soul? Can man lose his immortality? Can man lose his sinlessness? And she shows, no, he cannot, as long as you see that soul is soul, that soul is its own identity. Only sin can be lost. So the only thing that makes sense about losing something is that man can lose sin. He says that he can lose a sense material that he has to lose. He cannot never lose something that is spiritual. Therefore, she says, sin cannot be spiritual. It is a sense of sin which is lost. It's all about losing. She goes on again and shows in that side note, soul impeccable, that soul does not dwell in sense. It's always outside. Therefore, soul is not in mortal body. Therefore, there is no temporary loss or absence of soul. Can you see? Always when she comes to soul as soul, she would show that the identity that exists, soul, is never in anything, soul. And therefore, because it's not ever in anything, it cannot die. It cannot sin. It cannot be lost. There is no loss in soul as soul. And the only thing that is happening is that we lose a sense of sin, a sinful sense. That's all that is being lost. In soul as principle, she brings in science and says that science reverses the false testimony of the physical senses. Therefore, she counterpoints here the material sense testimony, which says it can only cognize unreality, never reality, whereas science reverses that knowledge and reverses the knowledge of the material sense and testifies to the truth. So, again, in soul as principle, what is the attitude? It says we know that the identities of being exist, they are immutable. That's what we have seen. They cannot be lost. In soul as soul, they cannot be lost. So the only thing that which we can lose is a a sense of sin, a sinful sense. What is a sinful sense? And so in soul as principle, she explains that that material sense is that which testifies, which interprets wrongly, whereas science interprets rightly, and therefore interprets against the testimony of the physical senses. Therefore that principle as alone can interpret rightly. Alright, then soul as principle will show us that through the interpretation of science we really can entertain the true concept of soul, which is sinless. And that true concept of soul in life shows that there is no death in it, that actually only the senses can testify to death. Here is a great point which we always bring out, which says nobody has ever really truly testified death, because we always have relied on physical sense testimony. The physical senses define a certain state as death, but the physical senses are not a good interpreter of reality. We have to go back to science as the true interpreter of reality, and therefore from that point of view of science we never really can testify to death. This is a beautiful point because it just says that death doesn't exist. Death doesn't have an identity. There is no such a thing, soul as death, life. That's the tone of soul as life. And so far we have here a terrific instrument in our hand, really to arrive in consciousness to the fact that man is immortal, that therefore the identity of man is deathless. That is the pith of what she wants to bring out here in the third subject. All right, we come to principle. Again, Mrs. Eddy goes to the Bible and sticks to the Bible from here onward. She starts right in with the concept of Jehovah, of the biblical sense of God, and elaborates from that in the life then of Jesus as an exemplar. So here comes principle, and the epitome of principle is that the belief that man is subject to a personal, unknown deity like Jehovah yields to the fact that God is man's impersonal but understandable principle. Instead of having a concept of man that is somehow mystically governed by an unknown God, a personal sense of God who somewhere exists, one doesn't quite know if he dwells on Mount Horeb or if he is in the tabernacle or in the Holy of Holies, one doesn't quite know what that Jehovah is and where he is and what he does. Instead, that the Jewish religion was subject to an unknown God, Christian Science will present that this God was actually principle, that they had a sense of principle without being able really to bring out that sense of a principle, and that therefore man must awake to the fact that he is not governed by an unknown God, but by an understandable principle. Mrs. Eddy presents this very authority of God as principle through five subtones, like this. First, she starts out with principle as mind. My epitome is, instead of understanding God as eternal principle, namely as life, truth, and love, mortals used to believe in a finite, corporeal, personal God. Well, this is still true today. This does not only apply to the prophetic age of the Old Testament, it applies still today that people in general still are right there. They haven't progressed very much further. That they feel that they have to believe in a finite, corporeal, personal God to whom they can pray, with whom they can talk, from whom they can ask something. Whereas Christian Science says God is a divine principle. People, she says, believe in a corporeal Jehovah. They believe actually without understanding. They believe, therefore, that death is inevitable, and they believe in a finite personal God. Whereas, now she gives the other description, whereas God is infinite love, truth, and life. So we have here first the definition of the person of God, the divine personality of God as principle, which is life, truth, and love. So man is subject to an understandable principle, whereas mortals believe in a personal God. Therefore, what should they do in such a situation? They should make a decision. Spirit always demands decisions. Therefore, in principle as spirit, in the next subtone, Mrs. Eddy urges mortals to turn away, really, from material gods, and that they should not turn to material theories. Mortals turn towards material theories instead of to turning towards that divine principle. So the decision is on them. They can either choose their own theories, man-made theories, is the marginal heading. They can either choose their own gods, which they have made, because you know how man-made theories are. They are really, they remind me always of those descriptions which the prophet always has given of the idols of the Israelitish people. You know, they have such a wonderful way of describing things. I think Isaiah does that very nicely, that he says, how do these gods that you worship really, how are they created? You worship these idols at home. You know where they come from. And he says, you know, people go into the woods, cut the tree, cut off the branches, burn the branches because they are no good, and then they carve out themselves an idol, and then when they have carved it out, they take it home and put it up somewhere in their room, and then they bow down and worship them. They worship their own creation. And it's so true that today we do the very same thing, that people and humanity, our present age, establishes out of their own mind theories, and they define these theories. And once they have defined these theories, they bow down and worship them and obey their own theories. And one always finds out that after 10 or 20 years, these theories were not good at all, and that one has worshipped the wrong God. But they are all the same thing as the idols of the Jewish people. They are handmade gods, self-made gods, self-made, man-made theories. It seems rather unbelievable that one creates something and then afterwards says, I worship you, now you rule me. And this is the point here which she brings out and says, people actually do that instead of turning toward the spiritual principle that is God. They turn to man-made theories about all sorts of things we worship today as man-made theories. And we know that from time to time they are overthrown, and that we see that these theories are wrong. Whereas we should really worship a divine principle. He says, well, if we don't do that, and if we choose the wrong way, and if we worship a personal sense of God, then that only limits us in every way. It divides our faith between matter and spirit. It turns us away from the intelligent divine principle, and we turn to the inanimate drug for healing. So this is the situation in principle as spirit. Choose ye now your gods. What is your God? If we choose the right, namely the divine principle, then we identify ourselves with a right principle, with a right theory. We come to principle as soul, identifying ourselves with principle, and that gives us naturally a new manhood, a new quality. Here, in principle, as soul, we have a Jesus demonstration of the divine principle, anointed him. Can you see? Anointed him, you get soul, anointed him with God-given qualities. We are newly identified. What we give to principle, we give actually within our consciousness, and therefore within our consciousness, a principle-like qualities is established, and so we are a new man, we are another man, we are actually then the identity of that principle. Mrs. Eddy explains that like this, that she says that Jesus' demonstration of the divine principle did what to him? It richly endowed him to sonship in science. It's an endowment, see, it's a giving. That's soul. Soul gives us something that is according to our divine nature. It entitled him. We get a new title, a new name. Just as Jacob got a new name and was called Israel, so we too, when we identify ourselves with principle, we get a new name, a new title. It entitled him to sonship in science. It gave him the title the anointed, the God-crowned, the divinely royal man. These are the new names he got. He was no more the little boy, the carpenter boy. He was now the divinely royal man. It's up to us also, if we like, to have a new title. The moment we are subduing ourselves and obeying the divine principle and identifying ourselves with the divine principle, that divine principle bestows on us all the godlike qualities, and we are new men. She goes on to principle as principle, and shows as a royal reflection of God, Jesus was an expression of God's glory. The marginal heading is, no, that's not true. That's no marginal. My notes are a bit upside down. She talks here about Jesus as the Son of God and describes him now in the light of principle and says that he is the brightness of God's glory, the brightness of God's glory, the expressed image of his person of infinite mind. He is the royal reflection of the infinite because he loved righteousness and hated iniquity. He loved righteousness. Righteousness at that time meant obedience, to interpret rightly, to do the right things. And so we get here a sense that he was the royal reflection of the infinite, meaning that every idea has the whole potentialities, the whole omnipotentialities of principle. Every idea is as big as its divine principle, qualitatively. Therefore, when we are one with principle, principle operates within us as the highest sense of principle, as the royal reflection. Royal is always a governing sense. A royal is always the governor of the whole country. It gives us a sense that the principle within us governs absolutely, imperatively, and demands absolute obedience, righteousness. She goes on to principle as life, still always telling us what happens when we have principle God. Now, if we have as our God principle instead of a personal sense of God, instead of having a Jehovistic sense of God, she says here in principle as life, now I say at the epitome, as the most scientific man, Jesus gained the solution of being. Now through this royal reflection as a king, as a royal governor, he really now sees that he is ruling over his whole being, that nothing in being, life, is untouched by that governing power. The marginal heading is Jesus the Scientist, is the royal man, Jesus the Scientist. And she says, he was the most scientific man, principle, that ever trod the globe, life. He's the most scientific man ever, life. But she doesn't just show that he was that, but she also shows why he was that. And here she gives all those tones of life that enable us to show that we are only a scientist of our own being if we undergo really certain conditions. She said, and now you listen, it's all centering around one common tone, that he was able to lay down his personal sense, his life, so that he could have principles own life. Mrs. Eddy said, he plunged beneath the material surface of things. See, he could see beneath the surface and go right to the depths of everything, to the spiritual actuality of things. He found the spiritual cause of things. That made him a scientist, that he went to see the spiritual cause of everything, not the material causes of everything. His fleshly sense had relinquished the belief of substance matter. Can you see that laying down of the mortal, of relinquishing really the belief of substance matter? The spiritual sense had quenched all earthly yearnings, life. If you don't know the tone of life, it's laying down the mortal, laying down the mortal sense of things. It has quenched the earthly yearnings. He found, therefore, beneath that surface, the eternal ego, the eternal being, his eternal I. And thus, she says, he proved, and that's why he was the most scientific man on earth, he proved that he and the Father were inseparable, principle, and thus he gained the solution, principle, of what? Of being, life. So here she gives a terrific sense how we can prove for ourselves really life and gain really the solution of life, and says, you can't get it if you are just staying on the surface. You have to go right down to the deep structure layer of being. You have to lay down your mortal sense of things, and you have to go really right down to the depths of being, to the cause, to the spiritual cause of everything, and only on that basis can you demonstrate the divine principle as life. This is her presentation of that 4,000-year period, where it was shown that instead of having a personal, Jehovistic concept of God, we really need as our God a principle that can be understood.